Good evening, guys. Can you hear me? Good. I'm just going to start by washing my hands. I've got a cough, so I don't want to, get in any way infected. How does this work, Rob? This isn't even squirt. It's meant to be like the hospital stuff.
We don't want you, so you can get the money back.
Yeah, right. I'll wash my hands later. So tonight, the talk is pretty much going to be about sailing and a little bit about spiritual gifts as well, hence why I'm dressed as I am. No, it's a joke. But there will be a lot of sailing references. Tonight, as Rob said, is the fourth in the series of What Does It Mean to Be a Disciple? And tonight we're going to be looking at gifts. So let's get on to the next slide, please. Last week, or the last few weeks, we've had John Fung was speaking, and I kind of summarized the last two talks, so if you weren't here, you can kind of know what was going on. John was talking about basically love yourself, or you can't love other people. That unless we've got a good appreciation of love for ourselves, we can't really enter into community where we give of ourselves to other people. So that's one key part of discipleship, loving ourselves and appreciating ourselves. What Richie was speaking on last week was kind of saying, grow up in yourself, become mature in yourself. Or else you cannot mature with other people and you cannot bring maturity into relationships and into community with other people. So there's the two kind of verses. So kind of like love yourself, grow up in yourself. And then this week we're going to be looking at gifts. And kind of the tagline I have is be yourself. Because when you are yourself, you're being unique. You're being uniquely the person God has made you to be. Okay, there's a reading here from Romans chapter 12, verses 3 to 8. So if you have a Bible and want to follow, you're very welcome to it. It's on page 1139 of the Red Pew Bibles. So chapter 12, verses 3 to 8. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. Just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ, we who are many form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. So basically tonight we're going to be looking at kind of a general introduction to what are spiritual gifts, what they are, what they aren't, how we know we have them, why we have them, what we do with them in community, and kind of just taking a little bit of a jump into just some of the gifts that are listed here. There's a lot more spiritual gifts listed in the New Testament. There's kind of lists in four different places. We're just going to have a quick look at this and then kind of see, do we resonate with these? So as we go through this, I want you to be thinking, do I have these spiritual gifts? Or does any of this kind of stuff make sense to me? Or have I seen people with these kind of gifts? And just really do be thinking about it. Okay, so I have a quote here. It's kind of a paraphrase from C.S. Lewis, and says, the more I surrender to God, the more I become who he truly intended for me to be. And Rob, you said that earlier as well. So random that it happens. So part of this is, as we become ourselves, as we become uniquely the people God has made us to be, as we understand our gifts, as we take hold of those gifts, as we grow in those gifts, as we let go of the other things, the dross, if you like, we become who God made us to be. And that's satisfying, and it's good for discipleship, it's good for growth, and it's good for community. So next slide, guidelines for greatness. Verse 3 here in Romans, it says, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought. Now I think, and you may not agree with me, but I think that in church we're sometimes tempted to act differently than we would in work or in home. I remember when I first became a Christian, and I was thinking, oh, I really care about this. This is so big. This is such a big deal. And I really want to commit, and I really want to get stuck in, and I really want to have influence. Does that ring a bell with anyone? Do you have to put up your hand? I think church is one of those things that in life that we can care about so much, so passionately, that we were just going to go, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to try that out, I want to go to this group, I want to go to that meeting. But it's not necessarily the best thing, because it's not necessarily the best fit, not necessarily the kind of gifting that God has given us, the kind of personality that we have. And here the verse is like, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought. Don't assume that you can do all these things. Don't assume that you have all these gifts, that you have all these committees and all these roles to be on. Think of yourself soberly. Try to find out what God thinks of you when he sees you, and try and integrate the two things. So it's kind of a challenge to us. Let's think of ourselves the way God thinks of us. Let's see what God sees when he sees us. Some of us have very strong opinions, and in church particularly, because we're so passionate, we insist on our opinions being pursued. And then when our opinions aren't pursued, we get very disappointed, almost disproportionately disappointed, because it's something that we care about more than, say, stuff we care about at work. So there's a big risk involved when we don't know our place, when we don't know our gifts. It's good to be passionate about things, it's really good to care, but it isn't good to consider ourselves more highly than we ought. There's an example in the Gospels of James and John, the sons of thunder. Do you remember the story when they go up to Jesus and with their mum they go, Jesus, can we have the two best seats, one on your left and one on your right at the resurrection of the dead? And he's like, you don't know what you're asking. Like, yeah, we do. We're able to drink from the same cup that you're drinking from. And they were thinking something totally different. They were like, we want to be right there. We want to be the leaders. We want to be right at the top. We want to be seen. We think that's our place. And Jesus had a totally different idea. And he's like, really, guys, you don't. And he was very gracious in the way he said it to them. But there's an example of two guys, two disciples, just like us, considering themselves more highly than they ought because they didn't have the full picture. The maturity wasn't complete. So, what do we do to find out what our spiritual gifts are? Or what do we do to engage with using our spiritual gifts? So the phrase here, know yourself. Oh, sorry, next slide. I have to flick down a good few. Know yourself and be yourself. So if we're thinking about being ourselves, being uniquely ourselves, it means we have to know what we're like. We have to know who God made us to be. It involves self-awareness. Now, today there's a lot of talk and books on self-awareness. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good. But what I'm essentially trying to say here is we all have different personality preferences. And the way I'd like to explain the personality preferences, some people like to sign using their right hand to sign their signature. Some people like to sign with their left hand. We're probably all able, if we try, to write with both hands. But one signature is not going to look very good. Unless you're ambidextrous. So we have a preference. It's the same in our personality. There's all these different preferences we have. We're probably able to engage in big groups, in small groups, one-to-ones, in different ways. We're probably able to really be empathetic at times and to be really critical in a positive, constructive way at times as well. But we each have ways in which we naturally prefer to relate to other people. So that's part of knowing yourself, knowing how you relate in all situations. And the other part of being yourself is knowing what your gifts are. Because when you know what your preference is, how you like to relate in groups, in situations, in church, whether you like to be the person at the front, or you like to be the person teaching Sunday school, or you like to be doing the accounts, when you know that, and then you can see if your gifts match that role, then you know your place in the community. You know how to engage. Does that make sense? Hope so. Okay, so I have a story to tell you about sailing with a friend and his dad. It was one of my first ever sailing experiences. I was about 14 years old, and I went sailing in Dunleary with this guy, and his dad was kind of a typical sailing skipper who was very, very aggressive and shouting the whole time. And I just remember getting onto the boat, and I didn't know anything. I didn't know any words. I didn't know. I was calling things ropes rather than lines and sheets, all these things that you don't do in sailing. And I just stood there, and the next thing he just shouted, jibe, jibe. And I just turned around. I didn't know what was happening. And the boom just comes swinging across, misses my head by about an inch. Nearly took my head off. And I just ducked down, and I turned around thinking he's going to say, are you okay? And he goes, what the are you doing, man? Get down. I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know what jibe means. He said, well, you shouldn't be on a boat if you don't know what it means. And I was just shocked. But that's an example of me not knowing my role on the boat. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what was expected of me, and I didn't know how to fit in. When you are yourself, when you're comfortable in your own skin, you know your place in the grand scheme of things, in your family. You know it in church, you know it in work, and you know it in life in general. And when that happens, there's a peace. It's peaceful, it's satisfying, it's relaxed. I remember one of the first jobs that I had, I was working as a consultant in business. And although the people in work told me I looked the part and I could wear the suits and I could give the presentations, it wasn't me. I just didn't feel it. I didn't enjoy it. it wasn't a peaceful, satisfying, relaxed experience. Versus now, I'm a teacher, secondary school teacher, and I just enjoy it so much. It's so good to just engage with the kids and chat to them and hear back from them. And it's kind of part of me knowing who I am, doing that, being comfortable in my own skin. Here's a quote from a guy called Polonius, a character in one of the Shakespeare plays, Hamlet. And it's kind of ironic, if you know the play, that someone like Polonius would say this. But anyway, "This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man." And this is kind of following on from what John Fung was talking about 2 weeks ago, that when we are free to love ourselves, when we know ourselves, then we're free to love others. You can't be loving others well if you're not loving yourself well. You can't be loving others well or knowing others well or developing others well unless you're doing that to yourself. Two things go hand in hand. So next slide. What are the barriers? Why don't we pursue our spiritual gifts? I think that, first of all, everybody has at least one spiritual gift. And the word in the Greek is a charism or a charisma. That's where the word charism comes from. It just means a gift. It's something that you didn't invent, you didn't make it up, but you got given it just like a gift. And we often think when we hear, oh, spiritual gifts, prophecy. But administration is a spiritual gift. It's the same word. Serving people is the same spiritual gift. It's just as spiritual as being a teacher, as being the person up the front, being the person in the back. They're all the same thing. So there's no hierarchy of spiritual gifts. I'm going to come back to this a little later on. So we each have at least one, and often we have more. I think one reason why we don't pursue our gifts is we make comparisons with other people. We see other people up the front of church or down the back or serving, and you go, oh, I could never be like that. And we get frightened. We feel insecure, we feel bad, we feel, I don't even want to try. I think particularly in an Irish context where it's such a big risk to step out and do something new or different or to try something, and you go, oh, if I fail, what will people think? How will people view me? Yeah? I think we see that a lot. So that's one barrier. And I mean, that again is about knowing who God has made you to be, knowing God's unconditional love for you, and knowing his desire for you to be who he wants you to be, who he's made you to be, and embracing that. That's how we overcome that fear, those fears of comparisons. Another thing is hurts in the past. Some of us have had bad experiences or have had no experience of developing spiritual gifts. I remember one time I was told, you don't have the gift of knowledge and you don't have the gift of teaching because I don't see those things in your life, by a Christian leader. I was just looking at the guy going, I love reading, I love studying, I love words, I love languages. I definitely have the gift of knowledge, but I kind of was beginning to listen to him a bit because this was this leader telling me. And he's like, oh, you know, you don't have the gift of teaching because da 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 da. And it can just knock you back. And when you're convinced of something, it may be that it's a gift that's not developed yet. I'm going to come on to this later. But when we initially get the rejection, we're so easily tempted to go, oh, I'm not going to try that again. Or we can also say, you know, well, I've had no experience of this. I think someone told me once that they think I have the gift of encouragement, but I've never really been a very encouraging person, so probably I don't have it. If your desire is to encourage, if there's a spark there, it's probably a sign that you might have that gift, but you have to tap into it. And it has to be developed. I'm going to come on to that again later. So with God, there's no experience required. It's like the opposite of ads you see in shop windows, you know, 2 years experience must have to in order to apply. It's the opposite. It's like, why would you have experience? This is your first life. Go and try it. Don't be worried about it. These are gifts that I've given you. I want you to be this person. I want you to do this thing. Finally, afraid. We're afraid of what we might find out about ourselves. We're afraid of, again, taking risks, making mistakes, being wrong. I've often heard people say, you know, there's no opportunities for me. I think I have a gift of serving. There's no opportunities for me to do it. And that's kind of one way of looking at it, is they're kind of saying, you know, you should be doing this for me. You should be setting it up. You should be making it happen for me because I'm going to sit here and wait until it happens. not necessarily the best thing, because as you're sitting and waiting, you're not being who you were made to be. You're not being who God has made you to be. You're not serving people. And part of you is going to kind of waste away, and you know that spark in you will waste away over time if you do not pursue that. And it kind of goes counterculturally, but we need to look for opportunities, seek opportunities for our gifts. Finally, gifts, I think, are like potential energy. They need to be tapped. There's probably plenty of people here who, for example, are musical, who could be excellent pianists. But I'd say many of you have never even played the piano, and you don't necessarily know it. But if you were to practice, if you were to pursue it, if you were to get into it, you'd find out, oh, actually, this is something that I can be good at. This is a gift. I can tap it. I remember the gift of tongues. I remember for years I was like, I don't even know if that kind of stuff exists anymore. And then finally I kind of was convinced it does exist. And then I remember praying for the gift of tongues. And when I finally did receive the gift of tongues, it was an unusual experience, because I didn't understand it. But it was like there was this potential inside me all the time. I remember telling it to somebody who really didn't understand what it was, but he said, well, you're very good at languages, speaking languages. It would make sense. It's like this latent potential. It's like this potential energy in you, and you just kind of engage with it at this point, and God has kind of just opened it up as you've pursued it. Does that make sense? So with a lot of spiritual gifts, that's what's going on. Right, when you're not yourself. Next slide. Hang on, what am I trying to say here? Yes, so when we're not pursuing our spiritual gifts and we're not being who we are, or when we say we come to the church for the first time and you go, I'm going to join this committee, I'm going to be on that rota, be on that group, I'm going to serve here, there, and everywhere. It's like starting a new job or a sport and you don't know what to do. You feel confused and flustered. You feel frustrated. You can try everything. And you can become very negative and stop caring. I was thinking of, like, what can I tell you guys as an example of this? You know Freshers' Week in college? Has anyone here been on a Freshers' Week in college? And you go to, and there's all the stands and there's all the stalls, and you see the 18-year-old first-year students coming in there with, like, they got 40 euro and they're going to join, you know, 20 societies, and they're going to go everywhere, and they're going to go to every meeting, they're going to get all the free stuff. And you see the fourth year's coming in going, I'm joining those three societies there. Because now I know. I know what suits me. I know where I belong. I've tried all these other things. They're actually exhausting. First year in college, trying to go to all those events and meetings, is just, you get wrecked. And these guys, they're coming back a little bit more maturity, and they know their place. They got two or three things to focus on now. And again, when I first became a Christian, I was like, God is real. This is amazing. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to join committees, go on teams, summer things, everything. And just got very tired and burnt out. And now I'm like, I know about two or three things that I'm going to focus on. And it's the best thing for me to focus on those things. And those things match my gifts. And when I'm doing those things, I don't get tired and exhausted. I feel exhilarated. I feel like it's where I belong. So gifts are like that. So you know you're not pursuing your spiritual gifts when you're getting tired and exhausted and you're all busy all the time. Okay, let's move on. The boat, what is it? Yeah, the something of Christ. So when the guy who was writing Romans, Paul, was writing this, he uses the analogy of the body, and he calls it the body of Christ. But he could have said the boat of Christ, the football team of Christ, the legal team of Christ, the medical team of Christ. He could have used any of these analogies, but he chose body. So I want us to see a quick clip off YouTube to illustrate this. Okay, so bring on the sailing analogies. Hands up who sailed before. So a few of us went away a few weeks ago sailing for a week in Sardinia in Corsica, and I thought this would be, there's lots of nice analogies we can use for body of Christ and sailing. On a boat, you all have different roles. So when we were away, Duffy was mainsail, and Niamh, well, you're head sail, were you? No, you're mainsail as well. And the people were navigators. Evie was working in doing the galley, so preparing the food for us every day. I was at the helm. We had people, we've bowmen, we've all these kind of roles. Just like in the clip there, so you saw a guy way up the front of the deck, and he's the bowman, he's getting the sails up at the front, and see guys standing on the big wheel of the helm, and see guys talking to them. Everybody is needed. Everyone is unique. They can't all do the same job, certainly not at the same time. And it's that in the body of Christ. We're like a big yacht, if you want, and we all have to find out which part of the yacht we have to be on and what kind of stuff we have to do. We can probably do a lot of different things. We can probably perform a lot of different roles, but some of us will be better suited to being navigators, some of us better suited to being in the galley, others better suited to being in the helm. It's the same in church. We can do lots of stuff, but we've got things that we're suited to. Verse 3b in Romans says, be honest in your estimation of yourselves. Like, just be honest. What role are you suited to? As you get to know yourself, as you get to find out what's going on, don't be still going, you know, I definitely want to be a navigator, you know, but you still don't know how to work a compass after 4 years of trying to be a navigator. You know, it's probably better for everybody's sake that you're not a navigator. You can't do it all, so find out what you should do. Right, we're nearly getting on to the last bit where we're looking at the individual bits of the gifts. So we're all different but complementary. We belong to each other and each of us needs each other. Verse 5. Why? Because we have different gifts and we each need others. So when we were on our trip in Sardinia, we had sailed over to Corsica and it had been like a force 2 wind. So it was like really gentle. It's like only 15 knots. It was lovely, lovely sun. And we were on the way back. And every day I was getting these text messages with the weather reports. And I was like, oh, great. Another force 2. This is going to be fine. We can put all the sails up. There's going to be no dangers. Everything's good. One day I didn't get my text report. And I was just looking at it and like, there's no clouds. It still looks like the same kind of weather. We'll just put everything up and we'll just head straight back across 25 miles of open seas and it'll be fine. Little did we know that there was a force 6 blowing up. Like, force 6 is like half a hurricane. So it's not bad if you're seasoned sailors. But going out, I was the only one who'd really sailed and there was 9 other people on the boat. So I was teaching them. And I was just looking across the water and I could see the water getting darker, which is a sign that there's wind coming in your direction. And I could see these other yachts way, maybe about 4 or 5 miles away, and their sails were way, way smaller. We had the full sail up. I was like, oh, okay, guys, let's reef the sail, let's take it down, let's make it smaller, and then let's put it back up again. And we're all just like, yeah, whatever. We're taking it down. Oh, how'd you do that? Oh, I've forgotten how to do that. Oh, what's going on? To cut a long story short, the wind hit us before we knew what happened. The sails were flapping, had to turn into the wind. 2 rollers were breaking, a shackle came off, a flag got caught in a clutch. I had to get a knife out to cut off a flag because the head sail wouldn't come down. Everything was swinging. A big thing of metal this size came flying off and started swinging at everybody's head in the middle of the cockpit. Everything just went absolutely crazy in the space of 10 minutes. And I was standing at the helm. And I had to be there because I knew how the boat had to handle in these kind of weathers. And I was desperate to be there tying the sheets and the lines. And I was desperate to be there showing the guys which way we want to winch in the sail right now. But I just had to do it because that was my role. And I totally needed everyone else to do their job that day. And it's like that in church. That if I had left my post, if we leave the role we have, if we leave our spiritual gifts, they don't get fulfilled and it affects everybody. And if we're kind of greedy about it, other people, they get annoyed and flustered and, you know, demotivated. And if we don't engage, if the guys have said, oh, there's a big wind coming up, I'm just going to go down into my cabin right now. Well, first of all, I'd been very angry. Second of all, it would have got even more dangerous because the guys weren't there doing what I needed them to do, doing what we all needed them to do. So we worked as a team. it's like that in the body of Christ. So here we have a few spiritual gifts we're looking at: prophecy, serving, teaching, encouraging, giving, leading, and showing mercy. So as I go through a really quick overview of each of these, I want you to be thinking, do I have this spiritual gift? Do I resonate with this? Does this make sense to me? Okay, so firstly, prophecy. Now, if a person's gift is prophecy, let them use it in proportion to their faith. I'd be the first to say that I'm really not qualified enough to give a good description of prophecy. I'd say Rob would know a lot more about it than me. 1 Corinthians 12:28, that's another part of the Bible where it talks about it, but we don't have time to go into it. Essentially, what is it? I think my understanding of it is it's speaking or showing God's truth in situations where it's not apparent. It's kind of a God-given ability to see the trees from the forest. Sometimes you might have a picture, which means like you kind of visualize a picture in your mind's eye. You know, I know I've experienced that. You have a deep sense, a deep intuition about something. You have a strong urge sometimes to say something to a person. That can be the way that it's manifested in the church. So that's how you know you have it. You have to remember that prophets in the Bible, particularly Old Testament prophets, they often were rejected because the stuff they said sounded crazy a lot of the time. It sounded mad and way out there. And even when it didn't sound that crazy, people didn't want to hear it. But I'm going to leave it kind of at that, and that maybe Rob go into it another time. So if that resonates with you, definitely do chat to someone about it, be prayed for afterwards about it, and talk to someone like Rob about it. Other examples: Eddie Hobbs, David McWilliams. In the broader scheme of things, outside of church per se, I think these guys have elements of prophecy about them, that they see the bigger picture, they have an intuition. These are guys, kind of economists, who over the last few years have been talking about, well, look at the state of our economy, look at what's going to happen. They're bringing an external truth to a current situation that not necessarily everybody else is going to see. So in a way, they're kind of working as prophets in society at large, if that makes sense. Yeah. We'll shoot on. Serving. When you have the gift of serving, you see the needs of others, you enjoy providing for the needs of others, and you are energetic. People who serve have to be energetic, because if they love serving and being there and giving to others all the time, they're going to get tired. So energetic people tend to have the gift of serving. How do you use it? By volunteering to help at things that you care about. And that's really important. Things that you care about. I underline that. Because we can be busy and do lots of different things and do stuff. But it's when we do the things that we care about, that's when our gift kind of really comes into full fruition. Teaching. The gift of teaching, what is it? I think it's an ability and a desire to instruct. You want to make complicated things simple. You like seeing big picture stuff and go, right, I want people to understand this. You know you have it when you like people understanding things. You love clarity in interactions. You like seeing people learning. You like clarity at the end of a conversation. Often, but not always, you're interested in languages and words and etymology and the history of words, particularly in the church context. You want to know that the word charism is the etymology of the word charisma, and that's the word for spiritual gifts. You're interested in that kind of stuff. Is anyone interested in that kind of stuff? I'm interested in that kind of stuff. Good. How do you use it? Take opportunities to teach, to coach, to instruct. I know that I would have some kind of a gift of teaching, because anytime I do something, I always imagine myself teaching that thing. When I learned to sail, I always thought, well, how would I teach somebody to do this? When I coach sports, when I play sports, I always go, oh, that's quite good, but how could I get better so that in the future when I'm coaching this sport, that'll be clearer and easier for people? You don't have the gift of teaching if you're like my old maths teacher in school, who was a brilliant mathematician, absolutely excellent. And he'd come into class and he'd throw up theorems all over the board, and I'd sit there not knowing what on earth was going on. And he'd say, any questions? And I go, yeah, what's that? He goes, what do you mean you don't know that? What do you mean you don't know that? It's simple. He'd say, oh, okay, yeah, it's simple. So that's an example of someone who might have the knowledge but isn't necessarily a teacher. Encouraging. Encouraging is basically bringing hope to all situations. You know you have it when you see the positives, even when things go wrong. That's kind of the biblical understanding of what joy is. Even when things aren't going well, you can see the positives in the midst of it. You like listening to people, and you often feel upbeat towards life. In CORE, for example, how would you use it? By joining, being part of the ministry such as Grandma's, where you go and get to look after kids of families who've been affected by HIV and AIDS. By being unwelcome at the door, by praying with people, by being wanting to be a person who brings hope into other people's lives. If that is a great desire that you have, it's a good chance you have the gift of encouragement. People with this gift often take jobs such as social workers or counselors and other kinds of jobs as well. Giving. If it's contributing to the needs of others, let them give generously. That's verse 8. So here's the challenge for those who have the spiritual gift of giving. It's to view money as something that's spiritual. Let me dip into a little bit of history in this. There's this thing called the sacred-secular divide that kind of happened about 500 years ago, and even before, where it's this idea that there's some people are religious and some people aren't so religious, and you can divide the world into things that are for God and things that aren't for God. Are we familiar with this? Have you heard the term? Money was one of the things that was considered kind of to be a dirty thing. It's not really spiritual. It's a means to an end, but it's not really a spiritual thing. And that's a relatively new idea in the history of thought. But it's something that I think a lot of us would have been brought up with, thinking, you know, I shouldn't have too much money. I shouldn't want to have money. It's a bad thing. Now, there's different motivations for wanting to have it. But seeing money as spiritual, seeing money as something that is God-given, is key for all of us. Back in Venice in the 1200s, when banks started out, the Christian said, you know, we can't, according to the Bible, we cannot lend money to each other and charge interest. And the Jews said, according to the Old Testament, we cannot lend money and charge interest. And the guys in Venice said, but we want to build our empire, we want to get money, we want to borrow money, we can't do it. So they got this little bit of theology where it says you cannot loan money to your brother, and they decided, right, well, we'll tell the Jews that they can set up little money lending things on banchi, which is the Italian for benches, where we get the word bank, and the Jews can give us a loan of money, and we can pay them interest, and we get what we want, they get what they want. We'll actually kind of exclude them and put them in a ghetto and make them wear yellow badges, which they did all 800 years ago. And the reason they did that was because they saw money as being dirty. It's not spiritual. And it led to a whole wave of discrimination, when you think back to how it started off. So seeing money as good and spiritual and of God is key. It's really important. There's a story of a guy who was chatting to a famous pastor in America. And he says, you know, I don't know what it is, but I can just make money. I can only have to work 2 days a week, 3 days a week. I can just make as much money as I need to live. So I'm not going to work hard anymore. I'm just going to take it easy. I'm going to work on my golf for the rest of the week. And this guy was a Christian. And the pastor said to him, but you have the spiritual gift of giving. If making money comes easily to you, you have got to see that that is a gift from God. And you've got to work as hard as you can and give away as much as you can to further the kingdom of God. That's not often a message we hear. It's not often a view we have of money. But money is a good thing. It's a spiritual thing. It's a godly thing. It's about giving sacrificially. So if you can make money and you like the challenge of giving sacrificially to see the kingdom of God being built, it's a good indication that you probably have the spiritual gift of giving. Next, leading. Leaders are those who care enough to take on responsibility and risk. They want to serve others in how they lead, so the way they lead is important. They don't want to be the up-the-front person, just like blasting their way through. The idea of failure doesn't frighten them, and they're teachable. They listen. They ask for feedback. They want to know how their leadership is affecting other people. You know you have the gift of leadership when you see the bigger picture. When you like to bring order, you like to bring focus, you like to bring vision, you like to bring enthusiasm to situations, to organizations. The greatest leaders, and it says, you know, here in verse 8, lead diligently. Don't just lead a little bit, but lead out of your strength. And I've kind of put 2 points here, that they're not trying to prove themselves. It's not an ego trip. It's actually, I want to serve people for the bigger goal of the kingdom of God. And they seek to empower people to be who God made them to be. They see, if I'm leading a company or an organization, I see I've got these 10 people and I see their gifts and I see what they're good at and I want to put them in the right places so that the whole thing can work. Think of me on the boat as the skipper. I see all the people. I see Duffy. I see his guns. And I go, wow, I want him on the mainsail. I want him to use them and get it up. Okay, we're nearly at the end. Showing mercy. If it's showing mercy, let them do it cheerfully. Often people with the spiritual gift of showing mercy value mercy above justice. They see, the little kid, he stole the thing in the shop. But why did he steal it? What inspired him to do it? Let's get to understand what's going on in his life and his background. I want to know. Yeah? You have this gift. If people are comfortable with you, you're approachable, you listen a lot, you empathize with others, it feels natural as well to be with people who are hurting. There's a great example of Mother Teresa, who she was teaching in a private school in Calcutta, and every day she'd look out the window of the lovely private school and see all the people in the slums. And her heart over time just broke and broke and broke to the point that she just left and said, I can't be here. I have to get out there. This is an obvious example of someone who had that gift, and she just went and did it. It changed her set of priorities. Okay, and finally, to finish off, this is a quote that Nelson Mandela used when he became the president of Africa, and he was quoting somebody else. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. I love the last bit. As we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we embrace our spiritual gifts, as we mature in them, as we grow as disciples, it lets other people see, oh, you did it. You can do it. There are gifts. I have a place. I have a role in this church. There is something I'm called to do. My life isn't just ebbing away. There is purpose, and God has made me a unique individual with a unique task, and that task is going to be something I'm passionate about, and it's probably going to be something that I have been given gifts to be able to complete. And even if our gifts, we haven't tapped into those gifts, we have them. It's a matter of tapping into them. The end of the quote, as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Has anyone experienced that when you see someone overcoming? And that encourages you, and you go, I can do that too. I want to be a part of that. I want to see that happen in my life. So the very last thing I'm going to say, as we know ourselves, as we become ourselves, as we understand our giftings, as we integrate these things together, that's pretty much how we find out what our calling is. And everybody has a calling. It's not that some people are called to do something. Everyone has a calling to be a follower of Christ. Some of us have particular tasks that we need God's supernatural power to achieve, but certainly not everybody has that massive, huge task. But it doesn't make us any less as disciples. Each one of us has a place. Each one of us has a role right here in this church, everywhere we go, in our family, in our work, in our lives. And this quote, I kind of think, sums it up, how to find that place. It says, where our greatest passion meets the world's greatest need, that's where your calling is. So I want you to maybe take a minute or two to just think on that. Think of what are those gifts that I might resonate with? What is God calling me to do? How I've been affected by hearing about this? What do I want to do next? Where is my bigger calling? And do I really understand that being a disciple of Jesus involves becoming constantly the person God made me to be?